Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Welcome in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. I am pleased to bring you today's program. Today's program is going to be a wonderful chat with an old friend, and we're going to have some fun along the way here. Having begun podcasting on the paranormal in 2005, Jim Harold is among a handful of pioneers in the medium. His programs have stood the test of time in the paranormal podcast, and Jim Harold's Campfire remain among the popular in the genre. Collectively, they've been downloaded over 60 million times. It's hard to imagine that number and hitting that number. I'll tell you that as a podcaster and a broadcaster myself. I tell you, you got to have been in it for a lot of years to have been listened to that much. That's for sure. Jim has developed a loyal following that spans the globe. In addition to his free podcast at jimherold.com, Jim also hosts a series of premium podcasts on the supernatural and related subjects as well. It is my pleasure to bring in to the Darkness on the Edge of Town paranormal radio show, Jim Harold. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing well, Tim, and I've got to say this, you know, that bio said something about me being a pioneer. Well, you're one too, so...
Oh, well, thank you, my friend, I appreciate it.
I know you've been at this as long as I have, and really great to be on the show, and thank you for the opportunity.
Well, it's my pleasure, and, you know, a lot of people, and I think maybe you underestimate a little, but a lot of people in our audience are very familiar with your show, and are entertained by your show each and every time you put out an episode. And Campfire Stories is incredibly popular among our audience, and they love, absolutely love the stories that you have, and we'll get into some of those stories here in a little bit. But talk to us a little bit about the Paranormal Podcast and what's going on over there on that podcast.
Well, the Paranormal Podcast, we've had some great shows lately. I spoke to Adam Bly about the potential dangers of the occult a couple of weeks ago, and although we may not have seen eye to eye on everything, I thought he was fascinating, and I think that's important for a podcaster to bring in people who may not see things quite the way that they do. And that certainly was very provocative. We just had the guys from Astonishing Legends on because I love doing shows with podcasters. And we need to get you on the Paranormal Podcast. And we've covered all matter of subjects. We have some great UFO shows coming up, so I'm excited about those. And for me, the Paranormal Podcast, which was the show that I started with in 2005, when I say paranormal, I mean all of it. I mean, UFOs, cryptid creatures, a whole range of different kind of phenomena. Whereas I think today we've kind of got in this narrow casting where we think, oh, paranormal ghosts. Yeah. And I don't know how you feel about, but that's the philosophy behind Paranormal Podcast. It was really kind of inspired by In Search Of.
Yes.
You know, I was a little kid. I loved that show. And they would cover everything. And that's why I like doing it. I like talking about all of it. And so we just don't do ghosts. We just don't do UFOs. We just don't do cryptids. We do all of it. We did a show a few weeks ago about the dangers of AI and what might happen. Mm-hmm. Then we did one about a haunted house, from heartbreak to happiness, in a haunted home with Mark and Morgan Knudsen. Mm-hmm. So the thing is that I believe in the big tent philosophy of the paranormal, and we try to interview some of the best thinkers in that world. And that's what we've been doing on the Paranormal Podcast. My goodness, soon it will be 17 years.
Yeah, that's I hear you. The years go by quickly. I got to ask you, because I'm curious. We like to try to cover it all here, too. And over the years, we've noticed that there's trends and there's things that people like to cover. And there's other things that people just as soon maybe not like to hear. Or I shouldn't say like to hear, but they have their favorites and they have theirs that they like to maybe pass on. What do you find your listeners tend to gravitate to and maybe they lay off of a little bit?
I think people love haunted houses, and hauntings. I do think that's a thing. But people, it's tough because I also get very good numbers on my UFO shows because I think people are really fascinated about that. And on my other show, my other main show, we have a number of shows, but my other main show, Jim Harold's Campfire, I've noticed an uptick in UFO cases and UFO submissions. So I guess what I would say is that... a lot of times it's a reaction to with the guest and the subject. It's not just the subject, not just the guest, but it's the combination of the two. If the person's well known or if they're very compelling, or sometimes even people who are more controversial, we see a bigger interest in. And it kind of goes with social media these days, kind of controversy sells sometimes. But hauntings are big, but the UFO topic is, it was kind of in the doldrums for a long time there, as you know. And now with all the revelations and the articles in the Times and the report that came out last year and so forth, I mean, I think that's top of people's minds. And also the fact we're seeing a lot more UFO stories on Campfire.
And we're going to get to Campfire in a bit. And I do have to ask you this, and we do have a Parashare segment on Supernatural News where people do bring their stories to us and tell us their true stories. I know with Campfire, you also have submissions with your show as well. Tell me, with Campfire stories and getting those stories out, tell me how difficult it may be for people to come forward and share those stories and how it is that you find year after year these submissions come to you. Is it a difficult process for you? And is it difficult for people to come forward to get those stories to you?
I will say that it's changed over the years. It used to be very difficult. And now we have to actually shut down submissions.
Really?
Because we have to pause them because we get so many. And the thing is I think over the years people have come to believe that or understand that they're not alone. And I'm not going to say it's just my show, because my show is a tiny, tiny kind of gnat on the elephant of the paranormal world. But with my shows and shows like yours and the paranormal TV stuff and all the different shows that are out there, and of course the great Coast to Coast AM, we got to tip our cap to them, of course, for everything they've done.
Yep.
Over the years, first with Art, then with George and all the great guest hosts. I mean, all that combined, I think, has made people think, you know what? I'm not alone. And by gum, I'm going to share my story. And we see really kind of more submissions that we can handle. I could do Campfire probably every day of the week.
Wow. Wow, that's impressive. You mentioned something there, Jim, and I want to kind of backtrack and talk a little bit about, and that is the soft disclosure, if we want to call it that, with UFO activity and what the government is starting to dish out. We've been promoting the UFO Disclosure Symposium out in Vernal, Utah, over Memorial Day weekend, and the fact that they're revealing 4 videos to the public at this symposium that have never been revealed before. They were under top secret, let's just say lock and key, for lack of a better term. We're getting information now that there were such things as invisibility cloaks that were discovered, and the fact that the U.S. government wanted to put a hole in the moon with thermonuclear weapons, and that there are, these files of unidentified flying objects or UAPs, and that finally the government is willing to talk, and now they want people to actually talk about their experiences. Is this the sort of stuff as podcasters that we should just finally swallow, take a deep breath and go, well, we knew it all along? Or is this something that we should be a little astonished about?
Oh, I think even though it's kind of like, this is an odd comparison, but I don't know if you've ever had experience in your life where somebody has been ill and you knew they were going to pass, but you just couldn't conceptualize. It's like, well, you know, got to get ready. You know, great grandma is going to pass and it's going to be sad and it's going to be awful. And, you know, and then it happens and you're like, oh, I can't believe that happened. And I think that kind of is the same reaction to some of this, is that like, well, yeah, it's, there's something real, because I believe there's something real here. And I believe some of it is not of this world or not of this reality. So back to the point, it's kind of like, I think there were those of us who always believe that there's really something to this above what we've been told by the mainstream press, what we've been told by the government, the military, whatever it might be. But when it actually happens, like, oh my God, I can't believe that really happened. So it's like that same reaction when, you know, again, this is a very sad thing, but when you know that that friend or family member is going to pass, it's like a kind of fait accompli situation. And then all of a sudden they actually pass. It's a different thing. It's like, oh my God, I knew it was coming, but I can't believe it actually happened. So I think a little bit of both. And the thing is that I don't think we should get too smug about I told you so, because I'm not convinced anybody really knows the answer. You might know part of the answer, that it's not what we've been told, but do we know the whole answer? I don't think so. I don't think anybody knows the whole answer. And I think the answer has multiple answers. I think some of it's military experimentation. I think some of it may very well be ET. I think some of it might very well be extra dimensional. And I very well think that some of it may be something we can't even conceptualize or understand, Tim, because there's a couple of things, the takeaways. I don't know if you feel the same way, because you've been doing it basically the same amount of time as I have, is that, you know, I always was kind of leaned on the side of belief. I was never a true believer who believed in everything, and I'm still not. Mm-hmm. But I'm more convinced than ever, whether we're talking about UFOs or ghosts or Bigfoot or cryptids or whatever it is, that something is going on, something beyond what they try to tell us is going on. On the other hand, as to what it is, I'm more confused than ever. So I don't know if that makes sense, but that's kind of where I'm at, that, yeah, I'm convinced this stuff is real. Do I know what it is? No.
I'm probably more convinced that it's real now than I was 10 years ago, in that in the documents that have been released, if you really take a hard look at it, there is a state of confusion in those documents. When you see what's been thrown up against the wall, you know, when you talk about invisibility cloaks and probability and the theories that are thrown up in these documents, it's like, well, you could do this, but then you need this in order to make this work. There's a lot of theory in this, Jim, and there's not a lot of fact, which scares me, which tells me that although there is things that are solid science that are worked on and solid theories that work, there are also theories, and they're just that, they're theories. At the same time, there is video out there of actual craft outracing our planes and our jets, and they can't explain what it is that's outracing our jets. And you're seeing it for yourself for the first time.
But yeah, you have to ask, I just want to say, I don't believe, you know, a lot of people try to say, oh, maybe it's the Chinese or the Russians. Now, I know there's a lot of concern about things like hypersonic weapons and those kind of things. But sure. I don't believe, for example, the Tic Tac video. I don't believe that those are Chinese or Russian. That's something else. What that something else is it interdimensional? Is it, you know, the ETH, extraterrestrial hypothesis? I don't know. But I don't think it's of current human creation. Could they be time travelers? I don't know. But you had a question. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no. I was going to go in the same direction you were going, and it's good that you went there, in that you have to question what it is. And I don't vote for 100% alien, like you were saying. I think maybe you might be dealing with something that's interdimensional. We've talked more and more about quantum physics and quantum universes, and now, you know, it seems like everyone's leaning on that theory now, that you know, there are, we could be just a step to the left of universes crossing each other. And there have been these articles that have been released throughout the last few months talking about, well, maybe there might be alternate universes. Maybe there's this, maybe there's that. And I kind of feel like we're being set up for something, don't you?
I think it's possible. I think it's definitely possible that we're being set up for something. And maybe, you know, the powers that be know even more than they're letting on, but they don't want to. You know, a lot of times I have a little issue with some of the conspiratorial stuff, but I had Jesse Marcel Sr. passed before I was doing podcasts. But the late Jesse Marcel Jr., who was the son of Jesse Marcel, who was the first military officer on site at the Roswell crash. Mm-hmm. And he claimed, and this gentleman served in multiple branches of the military honorably. He was a physician. I believe he was a surgeon. I may be misremembering, but he was very distinguished. And he said that he was given information that there's, you know, a shadow government and all kinds of things like that. So far be it for me to think that the government would be incapable of not telling us about something. I think that it's very well within the capability. And let's say, you know, I believe that there's good reasons sometimes not to tell the general public. There's national security reasons. I admire our military and the people who defend us. And sometimes for national security reasons, there are things that can't be talked about. Then again, why are the Kennedy assassination files, some of them still sealed 60 years on? I mean, that makes no sense. But the point being is that I think you need balance in all things. But I think it's very likely that the government isn't telling us a lot. And I think a lot of the reason might be is because they don't know what's going on. And I do think, Tim, I have a theory.
Okay.
I think there are warring factions, or there's still definitely people. I think people have this perception now, oh, the government's going to tell us everything. I don't think that's the case at all. Mm-hmm. For example, when that UFO report came out last year, I can't remember if it was May or June, whenever it was. Okay. They released it around 4 p.m., 5 p.m. Eastern, sometime there on a Friday. And that's classic strategy, communication strategy, when you want to politically bury a story.
Yes.
Because if there's a scandal or something, what happens is, especially in the old days, pre-internet, you would bury the story until Friday at 5, then the national broadcasts, newscasts couldn't do anything with it. And by the time Monday came around, it was old news and nobody cared. Mm-hmm. Now, a little of that's mitigated by the internet because, you know, we were on 24/7 and it was on Twitter and there were people that wrote stories about, but still the impact was less than if they would have launched it on Monday morning, right?
Right.
So that tells me somebody in a position of power somewhere in the government said, we've got to put this damn thing out, but I'm not going to put it out. You know, I'm not going to make it easy. I'm not going to trumpet it. I'll put it out, but we'll slip it out. And everybody's out having their barbecue. And by Monday, they'll say, oh, yeah, didn't the government release something? So I think there's definitely, I personally don't buy the fact that the government's saying, yeah, we're going to tell you everything now. And you're right. The aliens are here and our space brothers are here. I don't think that they're going that far. And I think the government that we often talk about is like a monolith. It's made up of people and people have different opinions. And maybe some groups are more for disclosure and other groups are against it. So I think it's tough to talk in absolutes about whether we will or won't have disclosure.
I've always believed that the government was there to more protect than it was to necessarily serve. It was there to keep us from tripping over ourselves and hurting ourselves than it was to make sure that we got necessarily what we needed. In that, I can't tell you why that is my belief. I just think that in these days and times, I don't think it originally started out that way, but in these days and times, I think that's why it's there. I think they look at themselves more as we've got to keep us from hurting ourselves. And I think especially with these UFO files, that's the way it's been treated up until now. I think now, and you touched on it earlier, what my belief is, and I think that's exactly it. they're releasing these slowly because they don't know what to think. You know, there's, right. I don't think there's really any real answers there. So they're kind of putting it out there and going, well, we don't know what to think. Here it is. You decide what you think of it. Because I don't think they have any answers. I think you probably agree with me on that, don't you?
I don't know. I think that I don't think they have all the answers. But I always wonder, were there secret meetings with Eisenhower in the 50s and those kind of things? I don't think so, but I wouldn't. I'd certainly have a guest who would explain to me why that did happen if they believe it happened. And I always have in the back of my head, did some things like that happen? But then again, what's more frightening? If you really think about it, is it more frightening that they know and they're working with whatever this is? Or is it more frightening, and I think it is more frightening, if they don't know? That's the scariest thing. If they're confused, if they don't know what's going on, I think that's more chilling than anything else.
I think you're right. The latter is more frightening, that there's no real control behind what's going on, than rather than them having a seeming sense of control. I think the administrations you were talking about before, the former administrations, felt like they had a sense of control because they were getting a handle on it. You know, they had that facade of control. Like, we're in control. We're doing what we can. We're keeping the public at bay. We've got this thing under wraps. I think, you know, if you fake it till you make it, you've got it. Whereas today's administrations, and I'll put that in plural, not picking on any one of them, always thought, you know what, if we keep them in the dark, we've got them.
You know, interesting.
I just think that's been the attitude toward it all. Switching gears here, Jim, let's talk a little bit more about Campfire. We're going to get into some stories here after the break, but as far as Campfire goes, tell me about the origination of Campfire and what was the kind of the, let's say, the origin of Campfire. How did it come to be in your mind and then fleshing it out into the podcast public? Because I know when we started Darkness Radio, of course, I think everybody's, I would say, inspiration for this type of broadcast had to have been Art Bell and Coast to Coast AM.
Absolutely, absolutely. The greatest one to ever do it.
Yeah. But Campfire is a little bit different origination, because you're obviously, I mean, it's in the title, Campfire and Campfire Stories, but tell me a little bit about the idea of originating that story and bringing it to a radio or a podcast format.
Well, the funny thing is that sometimes the when you're talking about, I'm not talking about Campfire, but when you're talking about things that are invented, the greatest innovations come through kind of an accident. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, what was it, the microwave? Some guy was working on something for the military, I think during the Second World War or something, and the candy bar melted in his pocket or something like that. That's how we got the microwave. Mm-hmm. With Campfire, and obviously Campfire is not, Jim Harold's Campfire is not nearly as important as the microwave. But anyway, the point being that one week I didn't have a guest for the Paranormal Podcast. And I said, you know what? We'll just do listener stories this week. And I did, and the reaction was very strong. And I said, well, I'm not the smartest guy, but this will work. And what is it? It's an electronic campfire. And then, you know, only did it occur to me later, after I had started the show, that Art Bell used to do Ghost to Ghost all the time, and those were among his most popular shows. But honestly, when I thought of it, I wasn't even thinking of that. I was just thinking of filling a slot.
Yeah.
And I thought, and the other thing when I started it, it was more like, well, this will just be fun. It'll be like telling fun stories. But I have people who come on who tell really touching stories. And the stories that we get, you know, they're the spooky, scary, frightening ones. Those are definitely a big part of what we do. And we always get the heartwarming ones too. The one about a family member who comes to visit after they've passed, or whatever it might be. So it's actually evolved into more than I thought. It's almost like, and I don't want to compare myself in any way to a therapist or anything like that. I'm not doing that. I would never do that. but it's almost like a support group for the air. The idea that people have a place they can go and share their stories. Or no, I'm not going to laugh at them. Our listeners are not going to laugh at them. We have a Facebook group, Jim Harold's virtual campfire group. virtualcampfiregroup.com will take you right there, by the way, and it's free. And people share their stories there. And I got to tell you, the people are 99% civil, nice, kind. If they're not, we kick them out. Mm-hmm. But the point is that just the support that everybody has had and the good feelings everybody has had and the openness to people's experiences. And it's grown to be way more important to people than my other shows, I think, because they feel that they can share their stories. And over the years, you know, I think it's become more accepted to share supernatural stories. But even back in 2009, when it started, it was tougher. And I think it's evolved into more than just a podcast. And I'm really grateful for that. And very appreciative of our listeners and our storytellers.
I got to ask you, Jim, because I get this too when I travel. When you get on an airplane or you get ready to go somewhere and people ask you what you do for a living, how many stories you get on that experience?
Oh, yeah. People will tell a story, but I've got a funny story about that. I had gotten called to jury duty two or three times. First time I went, and at that time I was working in radio. I worked on the advertising side. Even though I'd gone to school for broadcasting and so forth, I ended up on the advertising side. So the first time I got called for jury duty, oh, I work for a classical music station, and I work with advertising. Please, we'll seat you on the jury. And then the next time I was up for jury duty, it's after I was doing this full time. And they said, sir, what do you do for a living? Well, I'm a professional podcaster. It's like, and even at that time, this is probably several years ago, podcasting wasn't as popular nearly as it is now. He said, it's kind of like online radio, and that's what I do for a living. Mm-hmm. What are the topics that you explore on your program? Well, Bigfoot, UFOs, ghosts. And he said, well, thank you very much for your service. Juror number two has been excused. So all you paranormal podcasters out there, if you get called for jury duty, of course, do your duty, but don't hide your light under a bushel.
Huh.
Be proud of your profession.
And that's a great way to get out of jury duty, evidently.
I was absolutely truthful. I didn't lie about anything. I just said, I knew when I said it that, and that actually, it's funny, but it's not funny. Because why is that a bad thing, really, if you think about it? Why is it bad I have a show that talks about ghosts and UFOs and Bigfoot? Because probably 90% of the people in this room believe in at least one of those things.
Yeah.
But for some reason, you know, I'm the kook.
Why would it not be looked at as even a credible profession or a credible topic? That's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm convinced that's why. If I would have said, well, we do serious programs on politics or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm sure I would have been seated.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You probably would have been held over and been on that jury. Odd. That's for sure. So let's do this. Let's take our break early. When we come back, let's hear a few campfire stories if we can, Jim. And we'll delve into that when we come back. Our guest is Jim Harold. We're talking about the Paranormal Podcast and Jim Harold's Campfire. When we come back, let's hear a few of those campfire stories from Jim Harold right here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Our guest is Jim Harold. He's got two of the most listened to podcasts out there in podcasting land, if you will. Jim Harold's Paranormal Podcast and Jim Harold's Campfire. You can get them wherever you get your podcasts. In fact, we'll have a link in the description of this program so you can click on and enjoy those podcasts for yourself. Remember to subscribe as well when you listen to Jim Harold's programs out there. Our guest, of course, is Jim Harold, the host of both those podcasts. And Jim, before the break, I teased that we'd hear a few of those stories and send our folks either to bed or to the office, because our folks out there listen either or, but put a little chill in their spine as they're listening in either place, either the office or the bed. What can you hit us with today, Jim?
Well, this one, I just thought of this. This is a great one because it kind of relates to radio and everything. This listener, her name was Mary, and she came on and told me a story. She said that she worked night times, and she loved to listen to Coast AM. We just talked about it earlier. Mm-hmm. And she had heard a show about reptilians. This idea that lizards are among us and in charge. Now, I've done shows on reptilians. I'm skeptical, I'll admit it. But again, I like to put the ideas out there and let people decide for themselves. But anyway, Mary said that she'd listened to the show. I think it was George Norrie. And she'd really thought about it and thought, you know, kind of some of the things the guests said made sense in her mind. So anyway, she went home. And her husband's there, and her husband is a super skeptic of everything. So they're there at the dinner table, and they have a small toddler who's in a chair who kind of jabbers, but he doesn't talk that much. He's playing with his carrots and peas, and they're talking about this show. And Mary says, you know, this guest brought up this point and this point and this point, and boy, it really, you know, it really made sense. And her husband's like, that's ridiculous. I've never heard of such a thing. It's ridiculous. I mean, if this were real, why don't we know about it? And the little boy looked up and said, people not ready yet. And then went down and started eating his carrots and peas again. And I just thought that was so chilling because he was kind of jabbering at things that very clearly said, people not ready yet. And it's like, ooh, what's that all about?
Yikes.
Yeah.
You know, interestingly enough, I had a friend who told me years ago that she, when she was younger, she was in a club. And she was in a club with her friends. And she was, you know, they're dancing and they're having a good time. And she saw this man who was, as she described it, just intoxicatingly beautiful. And she kind of caught his eye from across the room. And decided, oh, she was just going to kind of flirt with him a little bit. And he noticed mm-hmm. her and kind of came over to talk to her. And she kind of felt this chemistry with him. Well, they started to dance. And he said, you're the one I've been looking for. And she's like, oh, that's quite a line, right? And so she said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, I've always been looking for our kind. And she's kind of like, what do you mean? He goes, she said, I don't get what you're, I don't follow. I don't follow. And she said, as they were dancing and he was looking deeper into her eyes, his eyes became that of like a reptilian, like his pupils started to go in from like regular pupils into just a slit. And his eyes colors, the eye color changed like into a yellow.
Oh, that's frightening.
Oh, yeah. And like his tongue went from like just a regular tongue into like a forked tongue. And then he said to her, "You're one of us." And it Yikes. Freaked her out. And she ran back to her friends and they left the club. And that just alone, that sent chills up my spine. I went, no, 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 no. And I said, well, did you ever follow up any of that? Like, did you ever figure out if you are like reptilian or anything? She said, I didn't want to know. I was like, oh, yeah, I would have freaked out at that point, too. Yeah.
Absolutely. My goodness. I mean, that is one of the more chilling thoughts. I mean, again, I've tended to be skeptical about that. But the thought that there might be reptilians amongst us, that is chilling. Now, on the other hand, there also may be angels amongst us, Tim.
Oh.
We've had angel stories on the show. And that's the thing I love about Campfire is we get a wide range. We'll get one of those spooky, scary stories, and then we'll get another one that's very, 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 very heartwarming. And we had a call from Morgan several years ago from Texas. And she told me that when she was a child, she would fly standby because her stepdad worked for an airline and they'd fly a lot. And they were a big family, so they typically would get separated in planes and those kind of things. One particular flight, two seats opened up, and the decision was for Morgan and her mom to take this flight. So one seat was in first class and the other was in coach. So Morgan, being a little girl, was a nervous flyer, and her mom, felt badly for her, and she began to cry as they boarded. So Morgan's mom said, you know what? You take the first class. See, it'll be a lot of fun. And Morgan said it was chaotic with people boarding and so forth. So Morgan sits in her window seat watching all this from first class, never been in first class. And then this woman takes the empty seat next to her. She was middle-aged, and she said hello, but really didn't make conversation at first. Then the plane begins to taxi for takeoff, and Morgan's fear intensifies, and she starts to cry, and the woman begins comforting her, telling her to watch out the window. Everything's going to be beautiful. The woman leans close to Morgan's ear, telling her to relax, and she begins to count backwards from 10. And as the woman finishes the countdown, 3, 2, 1, Morgan falls asleep. So anyway, she wakes up. She's hot. She's disoriented. She looks next to her, and her mom is sitting there. Now, confused, Morgan asks, where did that nice woman who was talking to me, where did she go? And her mom didn't know because after the seatbelt sign was turned off, they moved her to the front of a flight next to Morgan so they could both be together. And at about that time, the flight attendants were delivering drinks. And the mom asks, there was a woman here that helped my daughter, calmed her down and everything. Where is she? And I'd like to thank her. And the flight attendant says, there was no woman. The flight seat was empty the whole time, and that's why we brought you up. There was never a woman sitting next to your daughter. Was it an angel? And I've had other people talk about angel experiences, and I believe that exists. The thing to me is the paranormal is a continuum. There's good and there's not so good, and I think both parts really do exist.
Yeah. And, you bring that up, those experiences up, and I believe that too. I believe that we have angels that come along, and just as mysteriously as they come in, they help us and they move along. And I've had some weird experiences of my own where people just have floated into my life. They've helped me and they've moved along, and you try to explain how they came in and how they left, and you can't. You just can't.
Yeah, it is amazing. There was one that I wanted to tell you that, you know, I have what I call head scratchers on the show, kind of like things that don't fall into necessarily kind of a ghost category or a UFO category or those kind of things, but ones that just kind of make you go, what in the world was that all about? What happened there? And one that we had was a caller who, I think the story was about her aunt. Her aunt had an appointment or something down in a major downtown area of a major city. And she, and it's about 12 noon. So she walks up and does whatever she has to do at this appointment. She comes back down. Busy city center. There's construction workers. They're scaffolding. They're working up high on a building. She sees right in front of her, 12 o'clock noon, people all around. She sees a man basically fall to his death. And she's like, oh my God. And she kind of grabs her face and her eyes. Then she looks around and nobody's paying any attention. And she looks back and where the man, she'd seen the man fall, there was nothing. Everything was normal, like it never happened. And she went home and she said, oh my God, am I going crazy? What's going on? She tuned into the early afternoon news and so forth. Nothing, no indication. All this happened right around 12 noon. And she was distraught because she's telling her family, I don't know what's wrong with me. I saw this man plunge to his death, yet then he wasn't there. And then 6 o'clock news comes on. Headlines. Tragedy today in the downtown area. Construction worker fell to his death at 3 p.m. today. Explain that to me. She saw it happen at 12. It went away. Then it happened at 3. Some kind of precognition, I don't know. But those kind of stories, Tim, are the ones I think fascinate me the most. Because it implies that reality is far stranger than we understand.
Yeah, that's entirely just out of the realm of comprehension at times, you know? I don't know.
And again, time, the concept of time, that's another thing. We had a young man who called in. I think it was a young adult by this time, but he had kind of a two-part story. One happened when he was 7 or 8 years old, and the other incident happened when he was 15 or 16. He was in a family home, and he's walking through the hallway by the kitchen. And, you know, you think of a ghost doing a lot of things. You don't necessarily think of a ghost making a peanut butter sandwich. But he looks, and he sees this figure in a hood making a peanut butter sandwich. He sees him and he scurries back down the hall. He's like, oh my gosh, what in the world was that? Fast forward to several years later. He's minding his own business. He's in the same house, family house. He's in the kitchen. He's making a peanut butter sandwich. Happens to glance out into the hall. And there is a little figure that runs past. Looks like about an 8-year-old boy. And just as fast, he runs away. What does that mean, Tim? What does that mean?
It means Elvis got into your fridge. That's what it means, Jim.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know what I mean. But, but I guess my point is that, again, one of the key takeaways I've taken from the years I've done these shows, I think it's up to like 2,600 episodes now, of all the shows put together, is that reality is far weirder than we realize. It's kind of like, you know, I always try to come up with analogies for this stuff. And if you look at a drop of water, you know, on a car, you know, after you wax the car, it gets those nice little droplets of water. You look at a drop of water, you're like, there's nothing in that water. But if you take that water and put it under a microscope, it's teeming with stuff. And I kind of think that's what our world is like. It's teeming with stuff we don't understand.
Most definitely, yeah. There's a lot of things out there that like you said, head scratchers. There are head scratchers out there. There are things that, you know, phenomena that you think you have nailed down, but when you turn around, it may be something completely different. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Would you like to hear my favorite campfire story of all time?
Please.
Okay. I don't know if I've told this on the show before. Maybe I have. This came, and I will say this about this story. Pre-pandemic, I got to go out and meet the storyteller. We did a video on it. It's up on YouTube. And I'm more convinced this is real than when she originally told me the story. I'll go ahead and share.
Okay.
It's called The Roadhouse Saloon. And basically the story is this. Our caller's name's T.I. She was visiting Wisconsin. Her and her friend drove about an hour and went to see a band at a bar. And they closed the place down. They're both, I think, musicians. So they were talking to the band about various gigs and things. So it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. 2:30 in the morning, they get ready to leave. They have about an hour to go back home. And it's wooded. Everything is closed. It's 2:30 in the morning in the middle of rural Wisconsin. So anyway, they go a little bit, and T.I. says, I've got to go to the restroom. And her friend who's driving, Bob, says, well, you can always use a bush, but nothing's open. And she said, don't worry, just drive fast. Well, a little bit down the road, luck would have it, there is a bar, a saloon that is wide open, which is unusual. It's past closing time.
Mm-hmm.
All the neon signs are on. There's cars in the parking lot. You can even hear, you know how when you pass a place that's jamming the music, you can hear it kind of muffled. And all that was part of the picture. He said, I don't know why it's open, but let's go in so T.I. can take care of business. So Bob says, you know, I'm actually kind of glad we stopped here because there is this great mural. And it's an old West mural, and I've heard a lot about it, but I've never gotten to see it. So I'm really excited to see it. So anyway, they go in. Bob gets a couple of drinks, and T.I. answers the call of nature. And they come back, and the place is kind of weird. First of all, there is that mural. They know. And they notice everybody's kind of weird. They're kind of looking at him and almost kind of blankly smiling at them. And then they notice something weird. They start looking at the mural and they notice that the people in the mural are not, they have something unique about them. They're reflected in the real people in the bar. There's a woman standing over there. She's what they used to call a chorus girl in the old West mural. There's a guy standing over here. He's a cowboy. And pretty much everybody in the bar is in the painting and vice versa. I think that's kind of weird. And they started talking over what could explain this. Well, maybe the artist, you know, did this as an homage to the regulars of the bar. These people are regulars of the bar, and they just use them as the models for the subjects of the painting. And that makes sense. And then as they're talking, this young guy walks up and he smiles at T.I. And he's got, T.I. said he had a mouthful of rotten teeth. That's one thing she remembers about him.
Okay.
And they had a Wurlitzer jukebox, like a bubbler jukebox, a real old school ones with vinyl and records at that, you know. And he said, hey, do you want to dance? And T.I. said, no. She held up. She had a cane. So, no, I don't do much dancing. And she said that she was happy that that time that she had that cane. It kind of gave her an excuse. He goes over and plays Chubby Checker's Let's Twist Again, that song, if anybody's old enough out there to remember it. So anyway, just kind of weird. And everybody's still kind of blankly, you know, staring. There's a big, burly, like strong, good-looking farm boy kind of guy behind the bar, tending bar. And they're talking more, and they look back at the painting, Tim, and they notice there's these swinging doors. You know, in the old Westerns, it would be like where the bad guy would come into the saloon and say, I won't see the sheriff, and, you know, have a showdown and all that. So there are swinging doors. And they noticed, like, some mist in the doorway, and they hadn't noticed that before. And they were talking, said, that's kind of weird. And they looked back, and now there was kind of two columns of mist. And they talk more, and this is developing like an old school Polaroid picture. And there's two columns of mist. One is taller, one is shorter. One has boots. T.I. has boots. One has curly hair. The same one. T.I. has curly hair. And they're looking more human-like. It's a man and a woman. And then the one with curly hair and the boots also, she has a cane. And T.I. and Bob say, "That's us. Let's get out of here." They get up to go. The people start kind of motioning to beckon them back. But they go through the door. And everything goes black. The place is totally closed. There's a car in the parking lot. A car. Their car. All the other cars are gone. The turnaround, the place is totally shut up. Like it was never open. Neon signs off. No sound. Totally closed. Up silent. Like it was a place that was closed for the night. They left. And Bob kind of peeled rubber and left. Now, that would be a pretty amazing story, but it gets a little more amazing.
Okay.
T.I. is much braver than me, Tim. Mm-hmm. She decides to go back.
No.
She decides to go back. She takes a friend or a family member with her. I can't remember. A sister or a best friend. I can't remember. And they go back. Now, she's not totally immune to any kind of fear. So they go a little earlier in the evening, 7 or 8 o'clock at night. But they go, and there's a young lady there. And T.I. says, "Hey, how you doing? You know, I was in here the other night. That big, burly farm boy, good-looking, burly, strapping guy was trying to bar." And she said, "I'm sorry, ma'am, but there was nobody like that here. The only two people that bartend here are me or my elderly father." She thought, that's all odd. So she thought she'd go take a look at the jukebox. She went to look at the jukebox. Oh, there was a jukebox, all right. It had CDs, not vinyl. And it was not the old school Wurlitzer. It was a modern jukebox. And there was no chubby checker anywhere to be found or any twisting going on in that jukebox. And that was the story of the Roadhouse Saloon. T.I. left, and she's never gone back. And I've got a little other twist to it.
Okay.
The place really exists. I have pictures. Chad Lewis, the great researcher, cryptid researcher and so forth, just did an interview with him that'll be on the Paranormal Podcast coming up, went there and took pictures. And there is a mural. There's an old West mural in that place. He found the place, and I've had listeners who have said they've gone to it. So that place exists. And as I said at the beginning of this story a while back, when we started it, with T.I., it's the kind of thing where I believe her 110%. I met her in person, looked her in the eye. She told me the same story, and I think it happened. What it means, I have absolutely no idea.
Wow. Wow. So I have to ask you this, Jim, having met her, having talked to her, does she believe that she was in some mortal danger to be trapped in the painting? Is that what she's suggesting?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. I think she was afraid. She said, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, but the gist being that, what would have happened had I stayed there? Would I have been trapped? Yeah, that was kind of what she said. Yeah, she always wondered about that.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's my favorite all-time story. There have been some great ones. We've had some great stories, but that's one, if somebody said something that encapsulates the spirit of Campfire and what we do, because it's not just about UFOs or not just about ghosts. It's about the general strangeness of the world and our existence. I think that's like the ultimate story for me.
And it makes you wonder who was trying to keep her there.
Or why. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Boy, that one will get you every time. I don't care who you are. That's for sure.
Yeah. And the thing, what makes it doubly for me is I met the woman in person, you know, and that's the only you know, over the years, I've experimented a little bit with video, and I have a YouTube channel, and that video is up there. I think it's called Escape from an Extra-Dimensional Portal or something like that. And the thing is that I'm really glad I went and did that, even if it would have gotten 3 views, just to have the opportunity to meet her and talk to her in person. And again, I don't want to, you know, say too much about her background, but she was in a very highly regarded profession. Okay. And, you know, I believe her 110%.
And I think what people don't realize, too, is and I've done radio in Wisconsin, I've lived in Wisconsin, what people don't realize is that people in Wisconsin really are salt of the earth. They don't tend to talk about those experiences or even want to come out with those experiences very easily. That's not something that they just flaunt or throw around.
Yeah. She lives in Michigan, but I think she was a frequent visitor, and I think she had family in Wisconsin. So it's probably a similar dynamic. And I got that feel from her. She's very intelligent, but she's also very down to earth. I would say both things are true simultaneously.
Yeah. So, I mean, but think of the things that come out of Wisconsin, like the Beast of Bray Road, for example.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean,
absolutely.
Things that are, I mean, and not to mention, I do give my friends from Wisconsin a little bit of hell about things like Ed Gein and Jeffrey Dahmer. You know, I tell them, you know, there's nothing good coming out of Wisconsin, including Gein, Dahmer, and the Green Bay Packers.
Spoken like a true Vikings fan.
See, exactly. There you go.
But I'm still mad about Ahmad Rashad catching that pass against the Browns in 1980.
You remember that, huh?
I remember that. Yeah. I was watching. I was a little kid and I was crying because missed the playoffs. We're going to miss the playoffs, but the next week they got in, then they lost. But yeah, that was one of the great comebacks of all time.
Yeah, it was.
Unfortunately.
That was actually on a poster that I had on my wall as a kid.
Yeah, I remember it well. I think it was I think Tarkington had left at that time. It was Tommy Kramer.
Yep, who's still wandering around near my hometown of Blaine right now. In fact, I just saw him at a wrestling card that Bruiser was at, my co-host on Wednesdays. He went to go see him wrestle, and Tommy Kramer was in the corner signing autographs.
Number nine.
Yeah. He's still around. He's still reliving the glory days, and he'll probably tell you about that pass over and over again if you want him to.
No, please don't.
No, I know. I won't let you relive that campfire story.
Ooh,
at
that's
all.
Spooky. No, that's spooky for Browns.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Although your Browns are doing much better than my Vikings these days, I'll tell you that.
Well, you know, the Browns have been the spookiest franchise of all the last 20 years.
Yeah.
So I'll not boast too much, believe me.
So, Jim, I know you left us on a pretty high story there. Do you have one to top that, or should we leave it at that?
Well, let me see here. What's a good one to tell? I'm trying to remember some recent ones because I'm kind of doing this top of consciousness.
Okay.
But the thing is that trying to remember, I had one that was potentially the strangest campfire story ever, and that one actually would be I've got one for you.
Okay.
And this is very much along the same lines of just being a head scratcher. So anyway, we had actually somebody who lived in the Cleveland area where I'm from, Cleveland, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
She worked at a hospital, and she was a respiratory therapist, and she had to help transport a patient. So this was the morning time. So she went into one of these big freight elevators, and she took the patient. I think another staff member was there with her. And she looked across the hall, and across the hall, there's a smaller passenger, regular elevator. And she saw a group of people, and she looked, and she saw, guess who? She saw herself.
No.
And she thought, oh my God, that is so weird. What is that? And then she went ahead and went about her day. What else are you going to do? You got a job to do.
Right, yeah.
Later that day, getting ready to leave for work. You know, it's been a long day. She had this weird thing happen. Her and a group of people got on the elevator. You know, thinking, what a day. Looks across. There's a freight elevator there. The freight elevator she was in before. and she sees these two people transporting in a patient. Woman turns around, she looks at her. It's her. Doppelganger. Two times over. Both ways. And again, medical professional, very serious, very credible, says she absolutely saw it. What is up with that?
That's crazy. Yeah, you know, we've talked about doppelgangers in the past. I joke because one of my better friends is he's the spitting image of me, and we look like twin brothers. In fact, he was helping me out with cleaning out my storage the last couple of weeks, and we stopped into a store, and the female clerk at this store started flirting with us, and she goes, "Ooh, I love brothers." And we're like, we're looking at each other, but we do, we really look like each other. I mean, we we've only known each other a short time. But we're the spitting image of each other. And it's funny cause he grew up in Arkansas and I grew up in Minneapolis, you know, but, it's funny that, you know, doppelgangers really, I've heard quite a few people talk about how they've seen exact images of themselves or doppelgangers out there.
My perception from this person, this wasn't someone who was similar. This was basically
right,
her.
The exact same person.
Same clothes, yeah. Same everything.
Yeah.
That was the perception I got. It wasn't like, boy, she has a striking resemblance to me. Mm-hmm. It was like, that's me.
Yeah.
And again, this all, you know, any explanation for any certain story, I can't say, but in general, it is, Tim, where I say the world's way stranger than we can figure out. It's just way weirder.
So what do you believe a doppelganger is?
Well, one thing, well, I think there's two possibilities.
Okay.
And there may be many others I'm thinking about. Two that come to mind is, you know, doppelgangers are often seen where there's poltergeist or paranormal activity. So there could be some kind of spiritual aspect to it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, though, I wonder if there's a time glitch. You know, was she seeing back in time? That's very much like the story, a little bit different, but story with the little boy and the teenager making the peanut butter sandwich. So could it be a time glitch? But in those cases, but could there also be a component of some kind of thing nefarious? One story we just had was, and I haven't even aired it yet, about a young woman who told a story when she was a young girl. They sleep over or something, and her sister, I think, came into her room, couldn't sleep. She gave her a big hug, and then when she woke up, her sister wasn't there, and her sister came in and said, "Oh, did you sleep better?" or that something along those lines. "You came in last night and you couldn't sleep." She said, "I never came in last night."
Whoa.
So who did I hug?
Right.
I hugged a doppelganger. And what was that?
Yeah.
So we get a lot of those reports. More than I was aware of the concept of a doppelganger before we started the show, but I had no idea of how often that pops up.
That's crazy. Yeah, it there's so many weird things out there, Jim, and it's amazing how the weird is so common. You know, it's
exactly.
It's not as unusual as we'd like to think, and yet as much as the unusual and weird is supposed to be uncommon, it's so very common that we can go for so long reporting it, my friend. I mean, you know, like you said, you're going on 17 years. You know, we've been doing it now for 16 here, and you know, God willing, and the grass grow high, and we knock on wood, we continue on for 20 to 30 and many, many more. I mean, it seems like it as the world turns, there's more and more material to be farmed.
No, it's people say, well, how do you keep doing the shows? And there's always something new. You know, almost every week I get a campfire call for Jim Harold's campfire that is something I've never heard before. And I love that part of it because, you know, if it were the same thing all the time, it could get old really quick, but it's not.
Right.
It's very unique stories and always something new and something fresh and something fascinating.
Do you believe, and just before we go here, do you believe that as we advance in civilization, as we advance throughout the years, as the years tick onward, that veil is getting thinner? Because it seems like these stories are accelerating, aren't they?
I don't know if they're accelerating or if people are just more comfortable sharing them now. I don't know. And will we ever figure out the mysteries? I hate to say it, but I don't, you know, I'm firmly in middle age. I don't know that I'll ever see the answers. I do think, and I hope, I believe in afterlife. I hope on the other side, somebody pulls us aside, God or whomever, and says, okay, here's the deal. I hope that happens. But I don't know if I'll get them on this side. Although I think if you look at the long game, and if we don't blow ourselves up as a human race,
yeah,
I think that eventually people will start to figure things out. But I don't know if it's going to be in 10, 20, 30 years. I think you're talking 50, 100, and 200 years.
Yeah, I agree with you there, my friend. Jim Harold has been our guest, and an intriguing one at that. Folks, I encourage you to go check out Jim Harold's Paranormal Podcast and Jim Harold's Campfire. We have a link to both in the description of the show, and we'll have a little treat for you coming up in June. We'll just put it that way. A little treat from Jim coming up in June. As well. And I'm excited for you to check out his podcast, as really Jim is highly entertaining and has some great content on his own podcast as well. Jim, I thank you so much, my friend, for joining us here on Darkness Radio.
Always a pleasure. And thank you for taking time. And so good to spend some time with you, Tim, and your great listeners.
Thank you so much. Folks, I want to thank you very much for joining us for another great week of Darkness Radio. We have some great stuff coming up for you next week as well. We're going to be diving into some Sasquatch territory next week, I believe. So, among other things, we've got some great stuff coming up next week. Thank you so much for joining us here on Darkness Radio. Thank you so much for being a listener, not just a listener, but being a friend. Take care of yourself and each other. And thank you for being here with us. Thank you so much for tuning in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This has been Darkness Radio.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get the comfort and support with a new mattress from Serta. Find the perfect mattress for a deep and restorative night's sleep. Take control of your sleep and save big money on Serta mattresses now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big money on your outdoor project at Menards. Take the guesswork out of landscaping with our free, easy-to-use design program. Plus, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape blocks at the best prices. Get started on your dream landscape now. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com to see our full selection of landscape blocks and get your project started today.
Save